Hello and welcome to Youthful Idiots. I am Katie Halper.
And I'm Matt Taibbi.
And we are here to pump you up. It's so hard for me not to say that, like every show.
I want to say that. It is tough.
Cop to it.
Yeah, I'll cop to it.
You'll cop 26
I think I was out of the country when that was a big thing.
Oh, yeah.
So I can't remember exactly, but it made it all the way over to the expat community anyway. So
yeah. And we want to pump you up.
I might have been there. What year was that?
Hans and Franz. Oh, you know it, Wilson?
Mm-hmm.
What year was that? You were like a bait. You were like in utero.
It was early 90s. Yeah, I wasn't even in utero yet.
You were pre-utero.
A lot of stuff to discuss this week. We are recording now while the jury is still out on the Rittenhouse trial. So this is one of those shows where we're going to be behind the news cycle by the time this thing comes out.
Right.
Probably, right?
The jury's still out on that, too.
So that's happening. That's going to be a big fat mess, almost whichever way that goes. So
it's
that'll be
an acquittal, right? I mean...
No, not necessarily.
Really?
I mean, probably, but you know, I think there's some gray area there, and it depends.
I'm not saying whether it should be an acquittal. I'm just predicting it's an acquittal.
It depends a lot. You know, the judge gave some instructions in the last week that would tend to help the prosecution. So, but no matter what, it's going to be a raging shitstorm when it happens. So I guess we'll hold our fire until that happens.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
put on your diapers, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't really work. Put on your raincoats if it's
raincoats. There's not a whole lot else going on right now. Like what's happening? Biden's approval rating is dropping. Joy Reid lashed out at the country because of Biden's dropping approval rating.
I didn't see that. We should watch
that.
Yeah,
that was pretty funny.
Was that on TikTok? Because she's on TikTok.
Yeah, I think it was a TikTok thing.
We got to get on TikTok.
I'm too old for TikTok.
If you say, I mean, it's all about
I'm too old
mind.
For the club, so I'm way too old for TikTok.
Wilson can be our useful foot in the door.
Yeah, it's like a Benjamin Button thing. Like, instead of getting somebody who's old enough to buy you beer, we have need somebody who's young enough to get us into TikTok.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so Wilson, he bridges the gap.
He does. Yeah. I'm on TikTok, but I don't know how much that'll help. I mean, we could do it for mine. I made a little TikTok with cinema going like that. Like I just set it to different. It is fun. I just set it to different songs.
Mm-hmm.
And those did okay. Those got like a couple thousand views.
Yeah, I feel at a loss with that technology. But anyway, stuff happening. Let's get to it. Four food groups. Democrats suck. Republicans suck. Isn't that weird? Isn't that terrible? Or whatever the order is.
Yeah.
I still don't know. Right.
You like to surprise yourself. So I got Dem suck.
Yeah.
Let's see. We got an interesting article about Biden, who is reopening oil and gas leasing in the Gulf of Mexico. Now, I'm reading from CNN. One of President Joe Biden's boldest environmental campaign promises was to ban new oil and natural gas leasing on public land and water. But on Wednesday, his administration will open more than 80 million acres in the Gulf of Mexico to auction for drilling. The auction is at odds with Biden's climate agenda. The president has also promised to slash greenhouse gas emissions in half by 2030, and environmental advocates say it could set U.S. climate goals back for years. The administration tried in its first days in office to put a stop to new oil and gas drilling. On January 27th, Biden signed an executive order that paused new permits and directed the Department of Interior to launch a rigorous review of existing programs related to fossil fuel development, but a lawsuit filed in March on behalf of 13 states led to a judgment that blocked Biden's pause. Millions and possibly billions of dollars are at stake, Judge Terry Doughty wrote in his ruling. Doughty was nominated in 2017 to the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Louisiana by then President Donald Trump. The Biden administration is moving forward with the new leasing, and White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said their hands are tied.
So what's your take on this?
My take on this, honestly, mm-hmm. My take is that it's deeply troubling that the people charged with protecting our public lands and oceans are ignoring court rulings and their own data showing this lease sale is illegal and reckless. Oh, sorry. That's Kristen Moncel's take. And she is Oceans Legal Director at the Center for Biological Diversity.
Mm.
You know who else?
Who?
You know what my other take is on this?
What?
This administration went into Scotland and told the world that America's climate leadership is back. And now it's about to hand over 80 million acres of public waters in the Gulf of Mexico to fossil fuel companies. This is happening under the same lax environmental and safety requirements and inadequate financial assurances that have put Americans in harm's way for decades. And that is from me, myself, but I'm quoting Raul Grijalva.
Wait, those are your opinions, but they came from somebody else.
Yes.
I see.
Not just somebody else. I mean, Oceans Legal Director at Center for Biological Diversity. And not only is Raul Grijalva a congressman, he's House Natural Resources Chair.
How do you define that? Is that like a ghost take? Or like a...
Oh, that's a good question.
Like a rent-a-take? Or like...
What about shared take?
Yeah, like a joint take.
Joint take. I'm the Joint Chief of Staff of Joint Takes. Well, I'm a pioneer in joint takes. Like, it's not plagiarizing because you're crediting them.
You're crediting them.
Right.
But it's your take.
But you're claiming, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you could just speak by quoting people. I could, like,
but this is different.
This is different. What a coward would do is say, well, I'm going to agree with Raul Grijalva, who said, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Or I'm going to cite, but I don't do that.
That's not
boring.
You.
That's not me. Mm-hmm. I'm a trailblazer in the world of communication.
So we got to come up with a word for that. Joint take works.
Joint take. Oh, that sounds like an old person, an out of touch person talking about smoking marijuana or something.
That's right. Yeah. It hasn't been a joint forever, has it?
No, I don't think so.
It's probably still a joint.
It is.
Yeah.
But I'm saying joint taking is like, it sounds like a person describing, are you joint taking?
I still call it a joint.
You still call it a joint?
Yeah.
That's good to know.
Now, we're not talking about
the venue.
Are
you admitting something?
Yeah.
Nope. Just when I, if I were to ever refer to it. If I ever had to.
Nice conditional tense there. I like that.
Oh my God. Are we employing a pothead? Black male footage. Yeah.
Yeah. Can I tell you a funny story that ties into.
Yes, you can.
This Gulf of Mexico leasing thing. You know how I spent like 10 years of my life covering Wall Street?
Yes.
So the reason for that goes back to an episode that I had involving leases in the Gulf of Mexico. I was covering the campaign in 2008 for Rolling Stone, and they had me following McCain. I was with him in Kenner, Louisiana, which is outside of New Orleans. And if you remember 2008, there was a big gas spike, and it was like suddenly really expensive to buy gas.
Mm-hmm.
So McCain was... he was taking this position that, oh, well, these high gas prices mean that we need to approve new leases for drilling in the Gulf of Mexico immediately. Like we have to speed through.
Drill, baby, drill, right?
Drill, baby, drill. Remember that whole thing?
Mm-hmm.
Drill, baby, drill.
Yeah.
And
Michael Steele said it a lot.
Yep. And
Sarah Palin.
And Sarah Palin too. So he gives the whole drill, baby, drill speech in Kenner, Louisiana. On the way back to the plane, all the reporters are sort of joking around. They're basically making fun of McCain. They're like, this is like one of the things that campaign reporters always do. They always bust on the candidate behind his back or his or her back, but to their faces, obviously it's, you know, teacher's pet, right? So they're all laughing at McCain saying, oh my God, like what is drilling in the Gulf of Mexico have to do with the recent rise in oil prices or gas prices? You know, like how can you make that connection? And I kind of raised my hand and I said, does anybody actually know why gas prices are going up? can anyone explain that to me? And it was like crickets in the plane, and nobody could. And the reason was is that it's like incredibly complicated. It turns out it has had to do with, you know, essentially a speculative bubble in oil futures. It had nothing to do with supply and demand or anything like that. It was a commodities bubble that was not easy to explain. Nobody understood it. And this was sort of my first hint that none of us knew anything about economics. And it was like a week later that it was sometime after that, that this same group of reporters was at the Republican convention and the economic crash was happening and Lehman Brothers was collapsing. And everybody was sticking all this stuff about the crash in the lead, and nobody understood why the crash had happened, like, you know, what had caused it. So I mentioned that to one of my editors at Rolling Stone. They're like, well, why don't you do a story on what actually the reasons are? That's my story. It all started with like not knowing why gas prices go up. And
you're saying that's what was behind your deep dive into Wall Street?
Yeah, because I was irritated that everybody was like chuckling about the drill baby drill thing, and right, as if they knew better, but none of us knew better, you know.
They were mock-mocking.
Yeah,
and when you mock McCain,
right? And obviously McCain was doing it because he was, you know, gunning for oil and gas money and wanted to be a friend to every industry person, but it had nothing to do with like prices. And even if it did, it wouldn't have affected prices for a while anyway, right? Mm. Like that, I mean, that was another thing that was evident about that whole business. But anyway, yeah, so this is like an evergreen wet dream of industry is to approve those leases.
A not so green.
Yeah.
Evergreen.
And then the ANWR, the Alaskan National Wildlife Refuge, right? Remember there was who was the senator who wanted to rename it the Petroleum Refuge or something like that?
Probably Ted Stevens,
right? Or Murkowski, maybe. I can't remember.
That was amazing when he, you know, Ted Stevens, RIP, said that like when they banned,
he was a little man,
he would wear an Incredible Hulk tie on the days that he was going to like speak in the Senate. And when they protected some part of the Arctic, he said it was like the worst day of his entire life. And he fought in World War II, and his wife died separately. His wife died in a plane crash, but the worst day of his life
was when they protected some wildlife.
Bears.
Yeah, some polar bears. Well, that makes perfect sense.
And he was like, unfortunately, he said like, I'm clinically depressed right now. It's like when Michelle Bachmann said, that woman said her daughter was became retarded thereafter.
Oh yeah. Retarded thereafter.
Ted Stevens told reporters on Friday that he is quote unquote depressed over his failure to open the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to development, and that he is seriously considering retirement if he doesn't succeed. Stevens said he was suffering from clinical depression, but later told Alaska reporters that he has not been diagnosed with anything, nor is he taking medication. He said his personal physician told him to take more time off from work. Can you imagine going to your doctor and being like,
I'm so depressed that I failed
to kill polar
oil
bears.
Developers kill, yeah. Kill polar bears. I was going to tell another funny story though. You know, on the Hill, how there are pages everywhere.
Yeah.
Right. Like really young people, in some cases, not fully grown people.
Yes.
And they're wearing usually blue blazers and khakis.
Yeah.
So I saw Ted Stevens in the underground part of the Hill once, where the subway is. I mistook him for a page. I thought he was not a fully grown person.
You thought he had that disease where your face ages a lot?
No. I saw him from a distance. Like, he was just small and wearing a blue suit. So
that's so funny.
Yeah.
You didn't say anything to him. Paige.
Yeah, no. I didn't go up to him and say, you know what's so funny? I thought you were like a little kid. No, I didn't do that. We've strayed kind of far afield here.
Well, whatever.
This is about Biden wanting to drill in the Gulf of Mexico, right? that was the original.
That's how we got there. But I mean, it's very hard to talk about that, about without drilling, without talking feelings. About Ted Stevens.
All right, Republicans All right, suck.
Republicans suck.
This story I just laughed at because it's so classic. This is like classic old school stupid Republicans. And there's an irony here because, well, you'll see in a second. The story is Wyoming GOP votes to no longer recognize Liz Cheney. Here's how it reads. The lead reads, the Wyoming Republican Party voted this weekend to no longer recognize Congresswoman Liz Cheney, who represents the state, as a member of their party. Cheney, one of 10 Republicans who voted to impeach former President Trump, is one of two Republicans on the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. Jeremy Adler, spokesperson for Cheney, said in a statement that it is, quote, laughable to suggest Liz is anything but a committed conservative Republican. She is bound by her oath to the Constitution, Adler said. Sadly, a portion of the Wyoming GOP leadership has abandoned that fundamental principle and instead allowed themselves to be held hostage to the lies of a dangerous and irrational man. It goes on. I guess the idea is to try to ruin the optics, making the committee to investigate January 6th bipartisan. In other words, okay. Yes. this is so that they can't say that there are two Republicans on the committee.
Ah, right. That's a good idea.
But first of all, I'm not sure that actually works. In fact, I mean, I'm pretty sure technically she'll still caucus with the Republicans.
She's just a rhino. Yeah,
the language of the resolution drafted by the Lincoln County GOP calls on the U.S. House Republican leaders to strip Cheney of her committee assignments and the House GOP conference itself. So this is like a bunch of local GOP yahoos trying to basically get the attention of, you know, actually consequential Republicans in Washington with this dumbass symbolic move that does what exactly? Like it just says, oh my gosh, we're so behind Donald Trump that we're going to waste taxpayer time, you know, with this meaningless resolution to strip her of her GOP hood. That feels pretty Soviet to me. You know, we're so devoted to our dear leader that we got to do this stupid gesture. And look, I'm generally in favor of the really stupid gesture. What's the line from Animal House? This situation calls for a stupid, pointless gesture. Is that what it is, Wilson? You must know this.
Stupid and futile gesture?
A stupid and futile gesture. Normally, I'm in favor of that, but probably not in the congressional, like the legislative context.
Normally, you're in favor of, but not in legislative. Yeah, sure. I get that distinction.
Yeah,
that's a good line.
Like if a person who walks backwards across the earth, like there was a person who did that. Like,
really?
Yeah. Like I love that. Like,
we should have that person on.
No, it was a long time ago.
We should have their descendants on.
Yeah. We could have their corpse on. That would be fun.
Yeah.
But
and everyone who's watching this is going to make a joke about my necrophilia defense.
Right. Right. Well, hopefully that wouldn't come into play during the interview.
No.
Also, I doubt it because it's like it was a while ago, so there'd be only bones left anyway.
Right.
I think that person's name was Plenty Wingo. Plenty Wingo is an American man that walked backwards from Santa Monica, California to Istanbul, Turkey. From April 15th, 1931 to October 24th, 1932, at the age of 36, he remains the Guinness record holder for the greatest extent of reverse pedestrianism.
So wait, how many days did it take him?
It took from April 1931 to October 1932. He had reverse looking mirrored glasses. And it's a long story, but
very long.
So I admire that, like that as a pointless
gesture, right.
Stupid, futile gesture or pointless, futile gesture. Like there's some beauty in that, but not in stripping Liz Cheney of her Republican status meaninglessly. I don't know.
No, I agree. I mean, I would like her to be like stripped of her. What's the other side of it? Like what? Like resistance status, although the whole resistance thing is such a joke.
Yeah, that whole thing where she's being upheld as the, you know, the symbol of
decency
decency and civility and rectitude, right, by the kind of Max Boot, Bill Kristol, Lincoln Republican, or what are the, what's that called? The Lincoln Project?
The Lincoln Project, yeah.
Yeah, like all those types. Jennifer Rubin's of the world. That's pretty gross.
She's the worst.
Yeah.
I mean, who are they? I mean, yeah, any movement with them in it is like...
What's another example of this, though? There was a resolution. You know what this reminds me of?
What?
U.S. Congress opts for freedom fries.
Oh, yeah.
French fries in the House of Representatives cafeterias will now be known as freedom fries as part of a Republican protest at France's opposition to a war in Iraq. Republican Representative Bob Ney, whose committee is in charge of the eateries. First of all, you're really scraping the bottom of the barrel if there's actually a committee that's in charge of the congressional cafeterias and it spends any time on that. Anyway, he said the action was a small but symbolic effort to show the strong displeasure of many on Capitol Hill with the actions of our so-called ally France. French toast from now on will be known as freedom toast. Like, they actually spent time on that shit.
Freedom fries. It doesn't sound as appealing, freedom fries, but I guess do they want that? Was that the goal, to denigrate something linked with? I feel like they wanted to take it away. Why not just call them fries? That was their mistake. And this is why American empire is not doing as well as it could and should, because they didn't have good branding. Just call them fries. That is how you disempower the French, how you emasculate the French.
Right.
You're just, you become the idiot now. Now the French seem that much cooler.
Yes. You know, and have you ever spent a lot of time hanging around Congress or a state legislature?
Congress? No.
Like, if you sit in the gallery for a whole day of you at the U.S. Congress, which I've done like maybe five times in my life, you learn that they actually spend a significant amount of their time doing shit like renaming post offices and introducing resolutions to honor the uncle of the nephew of the stepbrother dentist. Of the dentist of the baseball coach, you know, who once said something to Abraham Lincoln or something like that, right? Like they spend all their time on this. Somebody gives a speech, they vote on it. It's like non-binding. And you're like, you know, what are they doing? And there's only like six people there because the actual members are never actually there. And then every now and then they show up for an actual consequential vote on something. But most of the time, right? I'm bitching about this GOP thing just because it just irritates me. It's like the Republicans seem to have an appetite for that stuff that goes beyond. They're more into it than the Democrats are, I think. Although I guess the Democrats did some pretty dumb resolutions during the Trump years.
Yeah, but I feel like that was like not quite as...
They were pretty performative. Ground. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not quite as historically grounded.
Right.
As it is with Republicans. Like, that's more of a typical Republican thing.
Right. Anyway, that's my Republican suck.
Moving on.
Yeah. What do we have?
Oh, isn't that weird? Okay, so for isn't that weird, I think we can just play the videotape. Now, this is borderline terrible, but I think it counts as weird.
Spiders, you may want to look away for this story. Someone donated a huge spider to researchers in Australia. That's nice of them. The body on the funnel web spider is nearly 2 inches long and has fangs capable of piercing human fingernails.
Oh my gosh.
The Australian Reptile Park says it's the biggest one they've ever seen.
Ew.
Someone gave it to them in a Tupperware container. Oh, that's nice. Without any labels to signify where it came from. So they're going to milk this one for the venom, and then that can be turned into anti-venom and kind of figure out this little...
So, you know, it's a little weird to just leave a spider in a Tupperware case without any warning. Like, you know, when you throw out glass, you wrap it up and you put glass on it.
Right.
Like, I think you should put spider.
Oh, that's fangs. Right. Like, so you don't, so somebody doesn't inadvertently like open it up.
Or just take the, if you put it in or like grab it. I mean, most sanitation workers wear gloves, so maybe it's a throwback, but, or overkill.
maybe that was how they caught, they got rid of the spider. Like they, it was in the, like,
right,
you know, in the bedroom or something like that.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So they trapped it in the thing and then.
Also, how do they know its fangs could bite through human nails?
Because it's probably a species that they're familiar with, that whose bite strength they can measure.
Right. Right. I guess it can't bite through Tupperware.
Can't bite through Tupperware.
But what if you opened it? You're like, what's this?
Right. And then it bites you. What kind of spider is it?
Well, they've dubbed it a mega spider. Actually, if you go to the article, Matt Wilson, it gives you a side by side of them. So you could see how big it is compared to other spiders. It really is quite disgusting. Not to like spider shame. That's a normal spider on the left and a mega spider on the right. Hmm. It is a lot bigger.
I think if I found that thing on my neck,
oh,
I would run full speed somewhere, like in any direction.
Well, here's my take, by which I mean the take of Michael Tate, Australian Reptile Park Education Officer.
You did it again. You're joint taking.
But I gave a heads up. In my 30 years at the pack, I have never seen a funnel web spider this big. We are really keen to find out where she came from in hopes to find more massive spiders like her.
That's a good Aussie accent. That's not bad.
Okay, yeah. She's unusually large, and if we can get the large public to... large, right? I'm trying
you
to
notice
remember
that the Australian accent kind of like, it has a little bit of... It's a little bit Bostonian.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Sorry, go ahead.
No. And also, I find myself making like a sideways thing with my mouth when I do it.
Hmm.
She's unusually large. If we can get the public to hand in more spiders like her, it will only result in more lives being saved due to the huge amount of venom they can produce. So guys, keep your eyes out. Yeah. Let us know.
If you find a massive spider in your house, don't just like put it in a Tupperware box and just leave it somewhere for people to find it.
Label it. Yeah. Put it in a Tupperware for sure. But then label it.
Label.
Mega spider.
And whatever you do throughout the entire process, speak in an Australian accent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you don't scare it.
Right.
No, that was British. So you don't scare it. I gotta watch more Rake.
Right.
That was weird. Isn't that weird?
Terrible is actually a similar story, but I'm going to do it in reverse because I think the effect is better if we read the actual news story first. So Wilson, can we see the New York Times story?
And shout out to Da Kosin name. He shared this with me. He's on Twitter, DAKOSENAME.
Isn't that terrible? Here we go. Plague strike Egypt, sudden floods, then 4-inch scorpions called death stalkers. Swept from desert burrows, hundreds, if not thousands of scorpions skittered into villages, stinging at least 503 people. Ugh. Dateline, Cairo, November 15th, 2021. First came the lightning that strobe lit the Nile skies a pale purpley gray. What happened next? I like that. This is the Upworthy style sense. What happened next will amaze you. What happened next checked all the boxes for a fierce storm. Heavy rain, thunder, and flash flooding that sent people scurrying for dry land and crumbled mud brick houses around Aswan, the largest city in southern Egypt. Then came the scorpions. There were hundreds, if not thousands, yellowish 4-inchers with as many as 6 pairs of eyes and a tail full of venom so toxic that the species is known unscientifically as the death stalker. Swept from their desert burrows by the rains, they came skittering into mountainside villages and burst into homes through cracks in the walls, stinging at least 503 people on Friday night alone, according to the local officials. So this is like biblical, right? This is like the angels who came down with the, you know, 7 golden bowls full of the wrath of God who lives forever and ever, and the 6 pairs of eyes, whatever, right? And this really happened. And
Egypt
is fucked up
a lot.
Yeah.
That's where the fair, I mean, that's where all those other plagues were.
Egypt has a lot of questions that's got to answer. So there's video on this. There was a tweet. And
see, this is why mine is only, isn't that weird? Because this is the real terrible. Death stalkers are worse than nail biters.
So let's go to the videotape. Thank you.
we see some like flooding. A guy, what was he driving? It looks like a motor, like a ski jet.
Yeah, that's like a moped. That's not really moped water. Moped.
Right, you don't want to be
friendly.
That? What's that guy? Oh, he's in like a literal boat.
He's like in a
canoe.
That's like a surfboard.
Like a surfboard canoe, a surf new.
Somewhere in this, there's an actual close up of the scorpions. Did they see it at the beginning?
I think in the very big. Well, let's keep
there. There it is.
That them? Yeah, that's yeah, them. Yeah. It was at the beginning. Okay. Look at that. That's disgusting. It looks like a chocolate croissant, kind of. Not chocolate croissant as we know them, but
those
as if
are
the
big.
Whole chocolate, as if the whole croissant were dunked in chocolate on the outside.
Yeah.
They also kind of look like dog droppings, but very symmetrical.
Right, but you could eat very easily, like, step on that by mistake.
Yeah, I hope you're wearing shoes.
This falls into a pretty, by the way, pretty classic genre of isn't that weird news story? Which is the
isn't that weird or terrible?
Isn't that terrible? I guess yeah, that's true.
It is a fine line.
It's a fine line.
We grapple with that often.
There's a lot of weird shit that falls from the sky stories. Yeah. They're once a year you'll get something that is really unusual.
Sometimes it's literal shit, not weird shit, but literal shit.
Well, that because we've done that from like a plane,
yeah.
Right? But like for instance, Wilson. Fox compiled a list of things that fell from the sky. Unidentified blood, citizens of Choco, Colombia reported red rain, and the scientists confirmed that the mysterious liquid was blood. Local priests held that the phenomenon might be a warning from God. A huge ball of ice, Brazil. This is a good one.
Looks like a whale tail.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yep. Spiders, Argentina, 2007, each one about 4 inches. That's
looks
a pretty big
tropical
one.
Like a tropical
this, this is great. Frozen squid. A Korean Ooh. Fisherman in the water off the Falklands spent 2 days in a coma after a single frozen squid dropped out of the sky.
Imagine what a pair would have done. Probably right. Killed them.
Periwinkles and hermit crabs. Toads.
What is that? That toad is cute. Did it hurt anyone, the toad? Was it a dead toad?
I found a toad in my house the other day.
But do you show your kids?
Yeah, they were really excited.
Blood is probably the worst one so far.
Cows.
A
claims
cow
that a Japanese
fell?
fishing boat was destroyed by falling cows prompted fraud accusations. Some proposed that the cows had been dropped from a cargo plane. All right, that was isn't that
that was
terrible.
The four basic food groups. Yeah.
Four basic food groups.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
Judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
So one more thing we should talk, maybe Katie, you and I should talk about just really quickly. I did a little piece about this, and it's relevant because, you know, Useful Idiots is a Substack.
Subscribe to
Useful Idiots on Substack. We are a Substack product. It's been kind of a running joke in the last year that seemingly like once every couple of weeks, somebody does a over the horror story about Substack, like it's this contagion. That's ready to take over the universe. This week we had two stories in quick succession this week that were kind of funny. The first one was a Vanity Fair piece called "The Good Newsletter Exit Strategy is Hard to Find." And the way a lot of these stories go is they're almost like anthropological surveys where they interview people who've returned from the wilds of Substack with like survival tales.
Right.
And they
like Scientology or something.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh my God, I made it back, you know, and there's, in this case, it profiles someone who like couldn't figure out how to quit in an elegant way. Then there's another person who's talking about how difficult it is to market. Like, oh my God, we have to do our own marketing. And if you go down, you can see it on screen, where he refers to it. In the wake of the summer of Substack, they refer to it as this like horror phenomenon.
Yeah. And, like Summer of Sam.
I don't know about you. I hear this every now and then. Like, I heard from somebody in the New York Times not long ago, like, the editorial page is terrified of Substack. Like, first of all, why would they be terrified of Substack? It's a tiny slice of market share compared to anything that would affect them. So there's this weird panic about it. And there've been all these stories. They've tried to come up with, like, different angles on why it's bad, ranging from it's home to people like Jesse Singel, right? Remember that whole thing? We interviewed them about that. It's racist to it's Trump supporting to, I don't know what else have they called it. It's weird because, like, the top person on the political list is Heather Cox Richardson, who's, like, the most hashtag resistance liberal in the world. So I don't know.
We should start saying that attacks on Substack are an attack on her, an attack on the resistance and women.
And women, exactly. So there have been all these scare stories for, like, a year. And then finally Vanity Fair did this thing that was kind of cheeky about how, you know, some people aren't all that thrilled with it, are going back to traditional jobs. So Axios followed up a few days later with this piece, which I mean, it's just really funny. First of all, they did a tweet that's entitled "The Substack Scaries Are Over." And then if you look at the headline, it says "Big Media Strikes Back at Substack." It's like, let's just read through it. It's just funny. Pressure from new publishing platforms has finally pushed newsrooms to create programs that give writers more pay, autonomy, and flexibility. Those changes are attracting some independent writers back to traditional news companies. Why it matters. The Substack threat to newsrooms was overblown. Newsrooms have been quick to react to the idea of the independent operator model, while journalists have been sharing its challenges or detailing why they decided to return to newsrooms. Driving the news, the Information is in early stages of launching the Information Netter newsletter network, a platform to power independent newsletter writers on the Information's tech stack. Then they go through all these other companies that are starting their own independent newsletter programs. And we can talk about how funny that is. Like, The Atlantic and The New York Times are putting out independent newsletter services.
Right.
So this is the bottom line. Journalists that crave the infrastructure and editorial support offered by newsrooms are finding more happy mediums as the newsletter industry grows. And essentially they're saying, you know, finally the summer of Substack is over. We can go back to not worrying about that. Meanwhile, the story buries the lead. If you look in the middle of it, it says, between the lines, Substack on Monday said there are more than 1 million paid subscriptions to publications on its platform, up from about 250,000 in December 2020. So that's a 400% growth rate in about a year, which, if that happened anywhere in traditional media, you'd hear nothing but news about that. But they just say it's a little aside in a larger story about how the threat was overblown and the Substack scaries are over, and people are going back to the happy medium of having a corporate editor and all that other stuff. I don't know. I don't know what you think. I just found this really, really funny, because just how can you not see the humor in The Atlantic and The New York Times starting independent newsletters? They're not independent newsletters, right? These are gigantic media companies.
Yeah, right. They're gigantic media company newsletters.
Right.
They're like indie chic, I guess, maybe.
But just definitionally, you can't have an anti-establishment product that's put out by an establishment organ. It doesn't work. They genuinely think that if they put out something that looks like Substack, it's the same thing and people will come to it. And it just always makes me laugh their thought process about the stuff. You and I talked about this, and maybe Glenn did too, about their, you know, their decision, MSNBC's decision that they were going to go after the youth market by starting a new streaming show with Nicole Wallace.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
how'd that work out?
Yeah. Like, so somebody actually sits down and has a meeting about this stuff and comes out of it saying, yeah, we really got it. This is how we're going to get that audience back. To me, it's just funny because Substack is still a relatively small phenomenon, I think. And even something like the Joe Rogan show, it, you know, it's got, he's one podcaster. He's got a huge audience that far outstrips any major cable show.
Yeah.
But these companies constantly make a cause and effect error. Like they think that their loss in audience is the fault of these little independent outfits, when it's like two separate things that happen. Like they lost the trust of audiences a long time ago.
Which drives people to.
Yeah, it drives people away first, and then they end up somewhere else. But right. It's not the somewhere else that caused that. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. I just find this funny. I mean, you and I have both worked in both sides of the media, and like, you know, in the kind of structured corporate version and in the independent version, and the mentality on the business side of corporate media, it just never fails to make me wonder about those folks.
Some denial, some delusion.
Yeah, here's an idea. Don't do an independent newsletter. Just do a better New York Times and crush us like bugs. You know what I'm saying?
Like scorpions.
Like scorpions, right?
Like large spiders, like mega spiders.
That's right. Or put us in Tupperware cases.
Oh yeah, put us, yeah. Tup us.
Tup us, yeah.
So why do we have ads? You may have heard that we have ads. Now, if you're paying Substack members, you get to skip those. You don't have them. You listen to ad-free shows. But why do we have ads? Matt, tell them.
One of the things that we're doing with the show is that we're donating a substantial amount of the proceeds of Useful Idiots to the Reporters Committee for the Freedom of the Press. Been in negotiations with them for a little bit, and we gave our first donation of $10,000 a couple of weeks ago. And we're going to do this probably every month. There's going to be, depending on how much revenue we make. Right. And the idea behind this is to help support particularly their programs for legal support for independent journalists. So these are people who do stories. They might be local journalists. They might be independents and podcasters. If they get into legal trouble, you can call the Reporters Committee for the Freedom of the Press. And they have sort of an amazing array of really useful tools. They can give you legal advice like right away. They will put you in touch with a lawyer if you're in trouble. They may even, you know, be able to fund the entire effort to represent you. And you know, this is in this age when there's so much pressure on independent media and local media coming from big corporate outlets. It's very hard for people to do good reporting and survive because they're not able to defend themselves when they get into a scrape or get accused of something. We're donating money every month to that outfit. That's sort of part of the rationale for why we decided to do ads again.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll keep you updated on the progress of how much we're donating over time. Thanks to your continued support on Useful Idiots and the kind of steady growth of subscribers, we're in a position where we're able to start donating real money to this organization. So thank you, and we'll see you again soon.
Bye, everyone. Hello. Thank you so much for listening to and watching Useful Idiots. For full episodes and extended interviews, please subscribe at usefulidiots.substack.com. You can subscribe on YouTube at youtube.com/usefulidiots for clips, live streams, and full episodes. Also, subscribe to us wherever you find your podcast. Follow us on Twitter at usefulidiotpod and use the hashtag usefulidiotspod. Join us Mondays at 10 a.m. for the Useful Idiots Monday Morning Show, where we discuss the Sunday morning news shows so you don't have to watch them.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.